evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, February 26, 2019. South Sudan's Vice President James Wanyika says the government does not have oil money to fund the implementation of the peace deal.
Since we committed ourselves to shutting down the oil in January 2012, that affected our country very badly, even to the point of regret. And so the little reserve that existed, we were eating it for all this time.
And the country's first vice president is defending his seat after opposition officials call for his removal from office.
We take issue with the anti-peace sentiments, including the declaration of Garot Garkot that now somehow is the chairman and commander-in-chief of the SPLM-SPLA-IO in government. We recognize only one commander-in-chief.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Vice President James Wanyika says the government is still in debt to Sudan for the deal it made over Khartoum's loss of oil when South Sudan seceded. Iga was responding to claims by the opposition that the government can pay for the implementation of the revitalized peace deal using the oil money. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
We might have assumed that since or for all this time, there are reserves. And so these reserves, we should begin to use from it. But my friend, that's not the case. You know, since we committed ourselves to shutting down the oil in January 2012, that affected our country very badly, even to the point of regret. And so the little reserve that existed, we were eating it for all this time.
That is Vice President James Wanyika saying the government has exhausted its oil reserves. He was asked to explain why the government failed to provide funds for implementing the peace deal at a Constitutional Amendment Committee meeting in Juba yesterday. Last week, the government said it gave a little more than $1 million to the National Pre-Transitional Committee, a body tasked with overseeing the implementation. SPLM-IO official Angelina Teng, who chairs the Strategic Defense Security Board, says that is not enough.
We've just presented a budget of $285 million for the implementation. Most of it is for the security sector and namely cantonment of forces. Without this happening, you know, that is a prerequisite for the formation of Tigon, and we are only left with 2 months. We have not yet even embarked on the cantonment of forces.
Gatwich Lam Poch, a member of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, or SOA, says the government could easily tap into its millions of dollars in oil revenue to implement the deal rather than fundraising efforts.
The agreement said the agreement shall be funded from the oil proceeds. And now we resorted to fundraising. And we are not hearing from the government about the funding from the oil proceeds.
South Sudan recently announced a boost in its oil production with new fields that had been shut down in 2012 due to the conflict. Opposition officials say that money can fund the implementation. Poch says there is no reason why the government cannot fund the deal, especially since oil prices on the world market have shot up in recent weeks.
That is in Dar petroleum alone. They recently resumed productions in the Gipok, that is the United States. They are saying that they have roughly 10,000 barrels per day. Multiplied by 30 days is 3,000 or 300,000 barrels per month. Multiplied by 60 will give you 1,080,000 something. Where are this money going?
Implementation of the revitalized peace deal is far behind its schedule as laid out in the revitalized peace deal signed by the warring parties last year. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
First Vice President Taban Deng Gai has responded bitterly to calls by his party officials that he should be removed from office before the end of the pre-transitional period. Guy's press secretary says the first vice president is willing to open a dialogue with party officials. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
On Monday, former Labour Minister and SPLA-IO General Gathot Gatkwoth and SPLA-MIO lawmaker Otim David Okot, who heads the Parliamentary Committee for Federal Affairs in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, declared themselves as interim chairperson and secretary general, respectively, of the SPLA-MIO party after pronouncing a vote of no confidence on Guy's leadership. Today, Guy Press Secretary Agel Machara read a three-page statement responding to allegations of mismanagement and corruption by Guy, calling such allegations political madness.
We take issue with the anti-peace sentiments, including the declaration of Gadot Gadkwoth that now somehow is the chairman and commander-in-chief of the SPLA-IO in government. We recognize only one commander-in-chief.
The press conference held at the first vice president's office was attended by military generals, lawmakers, youth and women allied to Guy. Machar says while Gadkwoth and his supporters have the right to exercise their political free speech, their calls for Guy's sacking jeopardizes the ongoing peace process.
We therefore call upon Honorable Gadot Gadkwoth and Honorable Otim David to stop building anti-peace sentiments, which are masked under the guise of public interest. The time for confusion, political madness, division, and the risking of innocent lives and property is over.
Borgad, which the SPLA-MIO chief whip in the National Legislative Assembly refuted, claims that most SPLA-MIO lawmakers in the National Legislative Assembly no longer want to work with the first vice president.
It is important to clarify that a vote of no confidence made in a press conference without actual party meeting where voting takes place remains invalid. The statement that they made is therefore baseless, anti-peace, and inconclusive.
Among other things, Guy's opponents in the SPLA-MIO accuse him of promoting officers to the South Sudan Army that hail mainly from his home area of Bentiu. They also accuse him of misusing party funds to bolster his personal political and economic interests. Machar says the peace agreement is clear that Guy must finish his term until the transitional government of national unity is in place. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A former official in Yei River State says his state is experiencing conflict due to poor leadership from sons and daughters of the state. Moses Simon Soro says he fled from Yei River State because he disagreed with state authorities on how to handle the clashes still occurring in the state. Soro says South Sudanese leaders must do more than talking in order to stop the fighting in Yei River State. He says the former governor had done little to prevent the eruption of the conflict back in 2015.
The governor back then was Colonel David Lokonga. So instead of him talking to the people, opening up, preventing the people from going, or even making the issues that are making the people to leave the state, to go for refuge, or to be internally displaced, he was not focusing on that. And me, as a representative of the people of Morobo, though I was not elected, but still representative of the people of Morobo because I went on the ticket of Morobo, I felt it was not fair for me to continue serving in a government that is not completely responsible in service delivery to the people, protecting the people, letting the people to cross over to a refuge. I've been a refugee before. It's completely not a very good thing to be at that time a refugee from your own country when we are already in the process of developing our country, moving processes, so opening schools, hospitals, roads, and all this, especially in Morobo and other parts of South Sudan. Those are the things we should be focusing on, not letting our people go for exile. So I felt it was not really worth it continuing to be in a position in a government as a state minister, but still you're serving nobody because nobody was in Morobo already. Morobo was already a disaster zone. People were already there. People is deserted. People are in the camps. So I felt I should also get out of there to make sure that I am in the same power with my people. This is why I moved out. Luckily, I have somewhere to be. This is why I came, and now I'm waiting. If anything, this peace implementation, if it goes well, then definitely all of us will go back and put hands together to make sure that we move our country forward.
And let's talk to us a little bit about what you're hearing from your relatives back home. What is happening in Yei River State? We hear there's a fighting there. Who is fighting who?
Yei River State, at the moment, there are, of course, pockets of people who are resisting, especially people from NAS, led by General Thomas Cirillo. I think they are the people who are still holding out, the people who did not sign the peace that was signed last year, which is very unfortunate. Because this peace, definitely, it needed all of us to come in. We should not let people go out and continue fighting, because nobody wants the fighting. If you go down there, all the citizens are saying they are tired of the fighting. But of course, definitely, it's also very important to make sure that the root causes of what caused the fighting should have been addressed. I know the agreement has addressed a bit of them. Yeah, it's a work in progress. We go and sit down with the agreement and see what we can do and what we cannot do. Because definitely, there's no agreement that is perfect. At least we've got semblance or something that we can start on. So let us start on that. Then we perfect it and we move forward instead of subjecting our people to suffering, killing ourselves for nothing. It's not a very good thing.
When you speak to your relatives at home, what are they telling you? Who is fighting who in Yei River State?
What they're saying is the government is fighting the hold-up group, which is, of course, NAS. That is what is happening around Yei. Because now IO are part of the peace deal. So they're observing the ceasefire, but NAS and government, they're not. Because NAS and government, they're engaged in fighting around Yei. This is what is now causing a lot of problems. And especially that side of Lasso and all this. So people are going to the camp. For me, what I will really say at this moment is, let us seize the guns. Let us stop fighting. Let us better sit down and talk our issues as people of South Sudan. Because fighting completely, it's not a very good thing. We've been there before. We know how destructive it is. Let us move the country forward, because at the end of the day, our country deserves better than what we are trying to do. As leaders, we should also think, the people we are leading, they really needed peace. They really need it quiet. They need service to be delivered to them. You see, we have a lot of resources, but you can see we don't have roads. Even our education system is completely lacking. There are a lot of things that our country is lacking. Where can't we really think of that? Instead of this, you see, some of us now are outside the country. This is the thing. Make a conducive environment. Let us all go down, put our hands together, build our country. Yours is yours, even if it's bad. We should not abandon it. We should go back. But the whole thing is the environment has to be a conducive environment that it will let everybody to be comfortable in being in his or her country. But at the moment, I don't think the environment is really that conducive. So the leadership should also look into this, that this is their task. As a leader, you're supposed to make sure that you lead. You're not supposed to lead your people out of the country, but you lead the people back into the country. Make sure they are comfortable and settled in the country. But I don't think that is what is happening now. So as South Sudanese, the message is really very clear to us. Let us choose peace, or we choose destruction, and we just continue to be a laughing stock for the world to see that these people, they had a very, very bright future, but we messed it up. 2011 was the best year for all of us. But you see now, 2019, where are we? We're not happy. The citizens are not happy.
That's Moses Soro, former county commissioner of Morobo County. He spoke to me from London on Monday via WhatsApp. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, an American organization is helping South Sudanese who have witnessed brutality of civil war for years. Find out how when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you start a conversation on a sensitive topic or issue?
First of all, you need to know the context, and you need to know what you are going to talk about and why they have brought it in that particular time. Okay. And from there, you make maybe after the introduction, you build the main body and you conclude.
You first need to put out the key things which you want to talk about, which can even capture the interest of the people. Because if you start with something which people doesn't have interest in, they will not give you time to give up what you want to tell them.
You have to know about the issue and you have to know how to approach the issue. You have to even know how to tackle the issue and you even have to study on how to speak on the issue to avoid conflict.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about healing South Sudanese who have been traumatized by war. A U.S.-based organization called the Center for Mind Medicine is working with South Sudanese who have experienced trauma caused by years of deadly conflict. An American psychiatrist who is training in Juba on how to help people deal with trauma says a common problem in post-conflict countries like South Sudan is that peace deals often don't heal people who are traumatized by war. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
Breathe in as we raise our arms like this, all the way up, and then breathe out and let the thoughts go.
That's James Samuel Gordon, a top expert in trauma healing, describing to Juba residents the kind of exercises one can perform to ease stress. In a large Juba hotel conference room, participants shared experiences of the atrocities they witnessed from 2013 to 2016 and how those memories have affected their lives. Juba resident Nyanachek Padiek, a mother of two, says she was born, raised and married in wartime. She says before she started attending trauma healing sessions, she always thought of the past which made her feel sick. Padiek says after attending her second trauma healing training class, she believes she is beginning to heal.
What I experienced on my age, on my younger time, also my kids has also experienced, it's all about war, killing, dying, running. So for all of that, I've been going through difficulties that even give me tumor disease in my body that I witnessed after the training. It was because of the trauma I'm through.
Participant Chol Kredit says his elder brother was gunned down in 2015. He says it took him long to accept the fact that his brother, the main breadwinner in the family, was not coming back.
I lost somebody very important in my life, and what can I do? I have no choice. Life is not like you can go and buy another life and put. I say I have to accept it. He has gone. And we have to pick it where he has left us. And I took courage, and we have to console our mother because she was a very old woman and she loved my brother so much. And I tried to talk to her. They take it easy. We are here. He has gone. And we'll do whatever that we can do on his behalf. That's what how we deal with it.
The Ones We Lost is a local organization established in 2017 to register and remember those who were killed during the Civil War. It organized the trauma healing training. Co-founder Joseph Amanya says many South Sudanese act aggressively toward one another because they have never been treated for trauma.
Trauma itself makes one who had formerly been a victim to become a future perpetrator. And we as South Sudanese need to begin fighting these gaps so that we don't produce tomorrow's perpetrators.
Daniel Akau, a father of three, his son was killed in the wave of violence that erupted in Juba of July 2016 between government and rebel forces around the presidential palace. He says he often thinks about how worried his children were at the time, which left him traumatized.
There are a number of traumatizing experiences that I've been going through, but sometimes I did not know how to handle them. And today I got skills, like for example, the breathing technique, whereby you breathe in, breathe out, and that in itself is relieving. And not only that, the dancing, you dance around, and also self-expressions, for which you also have to use drawing.
Gordon, the Center for Mind-Body Medicine Executive Director, says breathing slowly and deeply balances the agitation and anger one has accumulated over time. He says most of the people taking part in the training have lost loved ones during the war. Gordon says traumatized people are often anxious, agitated and preoccupied with the past, worried that what happened to them or family members will happen again.
If we've been traumatized, if we're ever going to function fully and help rebuild a society, we have to deal with our trauma. If we don't, we'll repeat the same mistakes. And that's what we've seen so many places, where people who have been deeply traumatized, then 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years later, they inflict the same thing on other people because they've never really accepted and owned their own pain, own loss, sadness, their own anger. So they take it out on other people.
In 2016, Amnesty International reported that decades of fighting within Sudan caused widespread psychological distress, even before the South gained independence in 2011, long before South Sudan's civil war, which began in 2013. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
Still on Health Matters, the charity group Doctors Without Borders, known by its acronym MSF, says it has closed an Ebola treatment center in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo after an attack last night by unknown people. The country's health ministry says one caretaker was killed and another hospitalized after the attack in Katwa district, the current hotspot for the highly contagious disease. MSF said part of the facility was burned down. Four patients who are suspected to have been afflicted by Ebola and six confirmed cases have been transferred to other facilities. The agency says it has pulled out its staff who have been there since December. Most of the cases since the start of the year have been in Katwa, which is close to the border with Uganda. The Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is an active conflict zone, and outbreaks of violence have forced occasional shutdown of the international effort that have allowed outbreak to flare up. The World Health Organization has reported 548 deaths, 872 confirmed and suspected cases since the outbreak was first declared in August. Australian Cardinal George Pell is awaiting sentencing after a jury convicted him of molesting two choir boys more than two decades ago. The jury convicted Pell on December 11, but the court had until Tuesday forbidden publication of any details about the trial. Pell, the most senior Catholic cleric ever charged with child sex abuse, was heckled as he left the courthouse in Melbourne Monday. One man yelled, and I quote, "May you rot in hell, Pell. You are an absolute freak. You are a monster," end of quote. The 77-year-old said nothing as he slumped into his car. He faces a potential maximum 50-year prison term after a sentencing hearing which begins on Wednesday. Vivian Waller, an attorney for one of the boys, read a statement on his behalf. "Like many survivors, I have experienced shame, loneliness, depression, and struggle. Like many survivors, it has taken me years to understand the impact on my life. At some point, we realized that we trusted someone we should have feared, and we feared those genuine relationships that we should trust," Waller said. Pell is Pope Francis' top financial advisor and Vatican's economy minister. The convictions were confirmed just as Francis concluded his summit of Catholic leaders summoned to Rome for a tutorial on preventing clergy sexual abuse and protecting children from predator priests. Nigerians went to the poll last Saturday to vote a new president after Electoral Commission postponed the elections by 1 week. Initial results on Tuesday show incumbent leader Muhammad Buhari, who is seeking re-election, already taking the lead. Timothy Obiazu reports for VOA from Abuja.
3-6. RP 2-6.
It is the second day of vote counting in the capital, Abuja. The official announcement of partial results started Monday, and the process is moving slowly. Initial returns suggest Buhari is headed for victory, a result anticipated by supporters like Nasiru Usman.
muna jin dadi a Nigeria in Buhari ya ci mulki muna so.
We will be happy if Buhari wins this election, he says. There is no problem in this country and Buhari has brought peace. Everything is working in this country, he says. For Nigerians like Taiwo Ogunkwade, who support the main opposition candidate Atiku Abubakar, conceding defeat will not be easy.
If Atiku loses in this election, I feel so bad and I don't think the majority of people fighting for him to become a president will also be, we feel so good about this. It's really, really not going to be a good news for most of the people.
Jaye Gaskia is a political analyst. He says Buhari's All Progressives Congress could win, but the margin of victory might be slim.
It seems from what is imagined that the APC has a slight edge over the PDP, but the results are not showing any dramatic differences in terms of differences in the number of votes between the two parties. So I think it's going to be a close election.
Gaskia says he worries both top candidates are not fit for the job.
I'm worried because it does seem that one of these two is going to be president and very likely the incumbent. But I don't see it transforming into, you know, a better life for the common and average Nigerian, because the growth model that both candidates have favored are models that are not inclusive.
But as more results emerge, Nigerians are watching and wondering, will the trends continue to favor the incumbent leader, or is there a glimmer of hope for his main challenger? Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Farida by Matelo.
Ferida, la mana waga fijerima, bolisi ki feti shwana. Min jamal bita ferida, la mana waga fijerima, bolisi ki feti shwana. Min halawa bita ferida, la mana irteki bukhatiya, ala deja asaluana. Min halawa bita ferida, lama na irteki bukhatiya, ala bija asaluana. Maleshi ya Yesu Masia, maleshi ya Rabbi Yesua, maleshi ya Yesu Masia. Ya Rabbi Yesu wa werini ashanja malde kuliyom gizidu fisir fi jamal bita binyade wala na magadira arifu
ferida le binyo wau jemi lao de hakika walai mabatal gizu ferida le binyo wau jemi lao.
Bita kamara unujum fi sama yomkin makifaya shalana wesifu jamal bita ferida.
We've been listening to Matelo with the song Farida. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Nasni situ salawat ungi jainu habibti ferida
ferida le binya wau jemi lau de hakika walai mabatar bilsu ferida le binya wau jemi lau de hakika walai mabatar bilsu
anashilu ferida aninaro wapi mahal bika
nasibu mutujua, omengeja eno habibti ferida.